being at Stonewall, which is a smaller, more nimble, more entrepreneurial company, we're able to take chances. We do things that we think are fun. Most of the time they work out, some of the time they don't, but we'll fail cheap. And so if we launch a product that we thought was great, but our consumers and guests don't like, okay, we chalk it up, we discontinue it, and we move on. But it doesn't cost us a lot. And so that nimbleness and sort of the entrepreneurial spirit is a big difference between Stonewall and a big company.
Ways to improve your community's marketing, starting now.
Starting now.
Starting now.
Right here on the Marketing Smarts Podcast.
Welcome back to Marketing Smarts, a podcast brought to you by Marketing Profs. I'm your host, Carrie O'Shea Gorgone. Thanks for listening. Today on Marketing Smarts, we'll welcome John Steiker, Chief Executive Officer at Stonewall Kitchen. If you're not familiar with Stonewall Kitchen, you should be, because they make some of the best food around, period. Their jams and jellies are so good that an astronaut actually asked for some of the Stonewall Kitchen blueberry jam to be sent to the International Space Station so that he could have a little taste of home. They have mustards and condiments, spreads, baking mixes, all kinds of things. The business started rather humbly at a farmer's market 25 years ago when Jonathan King and Jim Stott began selling jams and jellies. You can now get their products in 42 countries. Stonewall Kitchen does an incredible job with brand engagement. Their retail locations have cooking classes, restaurants. They definitely have the most tempting Twitter feed I've ever seen. And surprisingly, they keep all of their marketing in-house. I invited John to the podcast to talk about how a small company manages to make such a big marketing impact without outsourcing any of their writing, photography, production, or strategy. I'm very excited to have John with us today. John, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me, Carrie. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
You started your career in the Navy, and now you're CEO of Stonewall Kitchen, selling gourmet foods. So that's quite a journey. Can you tell me about it?
Sure. I grew up in a family. I had three older brothers who went to college before me. And so when my turn came up, my parents were flat out of money. And so I had to pay for college myself, which I did through a Navy scholarship. And in exchange, I had to serve active duty in the Navy after college, which was terrific. When I graduated from college at 21, I would say I was not terribly mature. I certainly was not organized and disciplined and motivated. And for me, at least, 4 years of active duty in the Navy really gave me that. So when I came out, there was and remains a very active job market for junior officers and certain enlisted folks coming out of the military, because corporate America really desires that discipline and motivation. And in my case, I picked up a lot of leadership skills because I was running groups of 30 and 40 folks. So I went from the Navy to Procter & Gamble, which jokingly is going from one bureaucracy to another. But P&G has a great tradition of hiring folks out of the military. And so it turned out to be a great fit for me. I didn't know the first thing about marketing when I started at P&G, but they have a great training program. And from that, I was able to really pick up a lot of marketing and sales skills. And then my career just progressed from there into a variety of different roles, ultimately leading me here.
Now, how do they recruit into a program like that? Is it like in the newspapers where they used to have a picture like draw this turtle and then you can get into art school? Like, you don't know anything about marketing, but do this and you can
go. On the contrary, it's more difficult questions. I kid you not. Here's a question I had from one of the interviewers at P&G. Tell me how many fire hydrants there are in the city of Las Vegas. And when I scratched my, I kid you not. And so when I scratched my head at that for a while, he said, I'm not really looking for the number. I'm looking for how you would get to the number, because I'm trying to understand how you think. And once he explained that, I was able to say, oh, okay. So P&G is very selective in their recruiting. It's a difficult organization to get hired into, but the payoff is tremendous because the training program there is really top notch.
How different is it working at Stonewall Kitchen versus working for Procter & Gamble, where you have a lot of brands you're responsible for?
Oh my gosh, night and day. So In fairness, you know, I was at P&G for about 6.5 years. And so in that time, I was promoted to brand manager. And I ran a brand as opposed to multiple brands. But the difference just in company culture between Procter & Gamble and Stonewall Kitchen is tremendous. I like to say I've launched more new products in the first year that I was at Stonewall Kitchen than I did in 6.5 years at Procter & Gamble, because they're just very conservative, very deliberate, very thoughtful in the way they operate and go to market. And being at Stonewall, which is a smaller, more nimble, more entrepreneurial company, we're able to take chances. We do things that we think are fun. Most of the time they work out, some of the time they don't. But unlike P&G, where they'll launch a new product with a $100 million marketing budget, we'll fail cheap. And so if we launch a product that we thought was great, but our consumers and guests don't like, okay, we chalk it up, we discontinue it, and we move on. But it doesn't cost us a lot. And so that nimbleness and sort of the entrepreneurial spirit is a big difference between Stonewall and a big company like P&G.
Well, they have to be flexible, right? Because if the strawberry jam is too runny, they'll just relabel it strawberry sauce.
If you only knew how true that was. We do one of the neat parts of our business is we have, as you may know, we have 10 retail stores spread throughout New England. One of the stores is our factory outlet store. And unlike a lot of manufacturers who sort of create products for their factory outlet stores intentionally, that's where we take products that don't meet our first quality standard. And so in every case, they're still edible products, they're still good products, but that's not an uncommon occurrence where you might have jam that doesn't set, right? So if you think of the texture of jam, it's got some bite to it as you put a knife through it. But sometimes jam won't set, and you'll get a runnier sauce. And so we'll sell that at the factory outlet store in Rochester, New Hampshire, and we'll put a sign up at that display that explains to consumers and our guests exactly what the problem is with the imperfect. But as long as you know that, there's a lot of folks who will like that. We'll sometimes get salsas where we put in twice as much peppers as we were supposed to, just a cook's error, and it'll be super spicy. But hey, there's people out there who love stuff like that. So it's kind of a fun aspect of our business.
So mistake is a much more fluid term in the Stonewall Kitchen universe than it might be in Procter & Gamble's universe.
For sure. And really for almost any food company, one of the many benefits for us of having these retail stores is it does give us an outlet for those where we will sell that product and we may not make money on it, but we don't lose money. What it allows us to do that other food companies can't is if I were working at another food company and I had, let's say, 1.5% of my production that was imperfect, we call it, I might feel some profit pressure to just accept those as first quality goods and sell them through to my customers and ultimately my consumers because, you know, 1.5% of your production could be a lot. In our case, we're relieved of that pressure. And so we're able to keep our quality standards very high because we know we have a home for that product. And at this point, you know, a neat consumer base who kind of likes it and gets it tucked away in Rochester, New Hampshire.
And some of the mistakes turn out to be some of your most popular products.
We have fewer new products that are discovered by accident these days, but we certainly experiment with a lot. We'll try, you know, 20 different new products for every one that we launch, for sure.
That seems like a big content burden to come up with, but you populate just a ton of different channels, Pinterest, Facebook, Twitter, the blog, YouTube. You're everywhere. Yep. So how can you be innovating that much and also creating that much content at the same time?
Another good question. Unlike any other food company or consumer packaged goods company that I've worked with, we actually have our own in-house design team that actually does all of that creative work ourselves. So, for example, I have an on-staff photographer and an on-staff copywriter. That's almost crazy. I've worked at much bigger companies that don't have either of those things. They simply outsource it. But here at Stonewall, a combination of, you know, the amount of work that we have to do and looking at how much you would pay to outsource it, but just as importantly, the control aspect of being able to manage the quality by doing all those things ourselves is why we have all of that in-house. So we do all of our web design ourselves. We do all of our catalogs, our emails, print advertising, trade advertising. We do all of that ourselves through a team led by our really terrific director of marketing.
And it looks fantastic. I've looked through all of it. I love the website in particular. It's very visual. It tells the story really well. How did the company decide that it was a priority for them to keep that kind of control internal?
For some of the reasons I mentioned, for the amount of focus that we have on great food photography, on recipes, on tips, etc., you know, that's a big part of who we are as a brand. So we knew we never wanted to walk away from that. And if you looked at, you know, outsourcing all of that, A, not only was there a trade-off in sort of the authenticity of it, but B, you know, from a cost standpoint, at some point, it just makes sense to have those folks on staff versus taking them all out. That said, we leverage everyone we've got here. If you've been on our website, you'll notice that we leverage one of our product developers as a source of content. Michelle Cole, who's one of our senior scientists in R&D, she's also got just a great bubbly personality, and she loves the new product she comes up with. So we'll video her, you know, certainly with every new product launch every 6 months to introduce those products, but also to do a lot of the other new product and recipe videos along the way to generate content.
So you have your in-house content team, but you don't limit content creation to those people. You actually use everybody. How do you empower employees to come forward and volunteer for things like that?
It is that kind of culture for sure. So to give you an example, for our new products, we have a 28-person employee panel who evaluates every new product prototype that comes through Stonewall. We grade them all on visual, texture, and flavor. And we rate them from 0 to 9. I'm not entirely sure why we don't go 1 to 10, but that's what we do. We do 0 to 9.
Because nothing's ever perfect, John.
Exactly. And the product has to score an 8 or better across all three of those measures. That would be a 9 out of 10 for those of you, you know, keeping track at home, but an 8 out of 9 for us. And that, when you think about it, spread across 27 people is a pretty tough bar, because a lot of times you'll have a couple folks who, you know, may not like rhubarb or may not like coffee or, I don't love bourbon, for example. And we tried a bourbon jam not too long ago that ultimately passed, but it wasn't based on my recommendation. It was just too strong for me, but the rest of the group really liked it. And so it's that kind of sort of participatory involvement that makes it easy for everyone to get involved. And we're also still, you know, a fairly small company. You know, we do have 10 retail stores, but here in York, York, Maine, which is our headquarters, you know, it's about 125 folks in the corporate office. And, you know, we essentially all know each other's names.
When you're working with that many people all contributing content, how do you keep it unified in terms of brand message and tone and visual appearance? Because it all does hang together.
I am thrilled to hear you say it, because it's a lot of work, but that's really where our director of marketing, Janine Summers, and her team really come into play. We considered Janine kind of our brand steward, and she can be the arbiter on what sort of does and doesn't fit. I mean, there are other folks who completely get the brand. You know, Jonathan King, who today his role is chief creative officer, he gets the brand in part because he created the brand. But in general, Janine and her team are sort of the gatekeepers to say, what is Stonewall Kitchen and what isn't. And so almost all of our content will flow through them.
This is just an aside question, but are the pictures on the site, are they actually food? You know how some places will put like mayonnaise instead of ice cream because ice cream melts or something? Like, is this actually food I'm looking at?
It really is. We have a full-time food recipe developer who will prepare the food, a stylist who will style it for the photographer, and our photographer will shoot it. And generally all the same day. I like to say the best part of my job is that towards the afternoon, I usually get to eat whatever they've been preparing that day. So we did a feature on different kinds of hot dogs from around the country not too long ago. Chicago hot dogs versus, you know, we have a red hot hot dog up here in Maine and a couple other varieties. And sure enough, at around 2:30 in the afternoon, they were done shooting. And I had about 4 hot dogs to choose from. I loved it.
Well, remind me to stop by on bittersweet chocolate sauce photo shoot day or something.
When you join Stonewall Kitchen, we warn you about the Stonewall 15. mean, because we're always eating here.
Yeah, but it's Maine. Don't you go outside and hike or something, or like
4 months a year we do. Yeah.
Well, those 4 months, you know, they're just beautiful from what I understand. So
yeah, no, Maine is pretty terrific. And that in itself is a big part of our heritage too. You know, there's a certain beauty to Maine. There's a authenticity. There's a cleanliness to Maine. You know, if you were to drive up Maine's highways, for example, we don't allow billboards on the highways. And so the minute you come into Maine, you know, people start to feel like they can breathe a little easier. You know, the state logo is the way life should be. And we kind of buy into that. I mean, that's a big part of what Stonewall Kitchen is as well.
Is that what drew you to the company?
That was certainly a big part of it. I actually grew up in Maine. And so I went to high school right outside Portland, Maine. But then, you know, my career took me away from Maine, really, you know, from the Navy onwards. And I'd been living on the West Coast when this job opportunity came up. And so for me, the opportunity to get back to Maine was a huge part of the draw here. You know, back 16 years ago, when we were building the campus we're currently in, which is in York, Maine, the company had the option to move to New Hampshire. New Hampshire has a much more favorable state tax structure than Maine does. But John was very firm, and we certainly believe it today. Hey, we're not a New Hampshire specialty food company. We're a Maine specialty food company. That's part of our DNA and part of who we are.
But you're everywhere. You're all over the world now.
We are. So we like to think we've, you know, our mission is to get a little bit of Maine to the rest of the country and the rest of the world. We're actually in 42 countries worldwide, which is incredible to me. But I have friends who live around the world and travel around the world and will occasionally send me texts or emails with photos saying, hey, I just saw this in, you know, a grocery store in Sweden. And I got one not too long ago from Abu Dhabi. And so it's always fun to see where Stonewall Kitchen pops up. But, you know, it speaks to kind of that authenticity. I think even globally, a lot of folks want to try foods that are sort of uniquely American. And we certainly are uniquely New England.
Even in space, I read that your jam even got consumed in space.
Correct. One of the astronauts on the space station, Chris Cassidy, is a native of York, Maine, and went to York High School. And it turns out astronauts can make some special requests for items that they want to bring in space or have brought up to them. And he asked for Stonewall Wild Maine Blueberry Jam. And so we had to come up with a special container for it that could actually be transported up into space. But sure enough, Chris enjoyed it up there with his fellow Russian cosmonauts. He introduced them to Maine Blueberry Jam, and we have some neat pictures of it.
Let's talk about strategy for a minute. How do you decide which channels you're going to be able to keep up with? Because this is, like I said, it's a lot of content. It's a lot of different channels. What is it for you that tells you one is or is not worth the upkeep?
You know, some of it is pure trial and error. And so certainly as it relates to social networks and various other kind of direct-to-consumer online methods, we'll try a lot. Some work for us, some don't. Some are on strategy a little more than others. You know, Pinterest is it just sort of intuitively feels better to us than Snapchat, as an example. But, you know, we kind of start even at sort of a higher level. We think of our business as having three primary channels, which are the wholesale channel, where we're selling to third-party customers like an L.L. Beans or a Macy's, a Whole Foods. Then we have our direct-to-consumer channel, which is our online sales, primarily through StonewallKitchen.com, but we also do sell through some other online retailers. And then we have our retail stores. As we think about marketing our business and reaching out to our consumers, we essentially make choices amongst channels, and then within each channel, we look at the vehicles that are most appropriate. So that's, again, part of Janine's role in marketing, is to be thinking about that. We're constantly testing and learning, trying new things. If they work, great. If they don't, we move on to the next thing.
People seem to feel really connected emotionally to the brand. You even have thousands and thousands of people who come to tour the headquarters.
Yeah.
Not a lot of software as a service companies have people knocking on their door for a tour. No, it's difficult, right?
It's funny. One of the problems we have that I don't know a lot of other food companies or other companies have is employee parking, because our parking lot is filled with guest cars who come to shop and to see what we do here. So we actually get 500,000 visitors a year to our York campus, which makes us one of Maine's top 10 tourist destinations, probably two or three after, I would guess, Acadia National Park and maybe L.L. Bean. But that is also, we like to think, part of our marketing is coming to the campus and experiencing sort of who we are. You know, the minute you walk into our York store, the first thing you notice is how many samples you can try. So we open up 100 jars every morning in that store. And our philosophy is, we know we sell a relatively premium price product, but if you can taste it and try it, you'll know that it's actually a good value because it's such a terrific product. We'll open anything. If a guest walks in and wants to try something that isn't open, we'll open it for him or her. Some of our guests know that, and they'll just open jars themselves, which is fine too.
That kind of thing usually gets you escorted out.
Not at Stonewall. Come sample like crazy. So we sample, we estimate we provide, you know, more than 4 million samples a year through our stores. Here on the York campus, in addition to the flagship store, we also have a cafe, which is really bustling at breakfast and lunchtime. We have a cooking school, which serves in the summer 7 lunches a week and 4 dinners a week, where we bring in celebrity chefs, cookbook authors. We have on-staff chefs, and we'll instruct folks in how to prepare food and provide tips and serve them a great meal at the same time. And then we actually also have our manufacturing facility behind glass. And so we'll let all of our guests see what we're producing that day. We don't have any secrets. We don't feel we have anything to hide in the way we produce product. And so we're happy to have guests come and look and see how we make the great product that we sell.
Do you see an uptick in sales after, say, a cooking class or something like that? What role does that kind of experiential marketing play in your business's success?
We absolutely do. And it's while it's certainly not super easy to track long-term sales like that, we view the cooking school and the store and the cafe as brand builders. You know, I often say we don't make a ton of money on certain parts of those businesses, but that's okay because it's almost like a marketing program that pays for itself. You know, if I could open, you know, 10 more stores that all paid for themselves, so like, what's not to love? There's, you know, time and space and cost restrictions that make that challenging. But we know that 10% of our overall consumer base first experience the brand at one of our stores. And with 500,000 people a year coming through just the York facility, not to mention the other 9 stores, we know that that's a big part of how our guests are creating a bond with the brand.
What's your guilty pleasure? What's the thing that you know is bad for you, but you can't stop eating?
We have a chili con queso sauce that is so good. At our cafe, I get a breakfast sandwich and I call it into the cafe now and I just say, make me a Steiker special. And that is 2 eggs on a bagel with turkey sausage, and then they just drench it in our queso sauce.
So you're doing pretty well right up until you got the sauce. Everything other than that, I think your doctor would be okay with. John, where can people learn more and how can they come and visit and get the full Stonewall Kitchen experience?
So to learn more, you know, as you would guess, stonewallkitchen.com is, we like to think, a very robust website. On that, we list the locations of our 10 stores, which are essentially spread kind of Connecticut up through Maine. We do have one store down in Maryland. Our products are sold on the shelves of third-party retailers across the country. So whether that's, you know, Macy's or Whole Foods, Harris Teeter, some Pavilions out on the West Coast or Gelson's. You know, more and more, we're working hard to very carefully place our products into the right third-party retailers. But yeah, at our website, boy, we've got everything. You know, we offer close to 2,000 products on the website, which, you know, is vastly more than they'll find in any of their local grocery stores. And that's what we offer in our retail stores as well, is an experience that's just much bigger for the brand than what you can get in a grocery store.
Wonderful. John, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks, Carrie. Really appreciate your time.
For more information or to work on gaining your Stonewall 15 from home, visit stonewallkitchen.com. You can also find the company on Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook, pretty much everywhere that photographs of really nice looking food get shared. Thanks for listening here to the very end. This has been the Marketing Smarts Podcast, brought to you by Marketing Profs. I'm your host, Carrie O'Shea Gorgone. Talk with you next week.